first podcast from Holistic Matters in 2022. This is the monthly medicinal herb series with host Sarah Labrum-Bloschka. And this week, our guest is naturopath and medical herbalist Baris Burgoyne, who talks with us about a very common topic at this time of year, detoxification.
I'm super excited about this topic because I feel like this is an important topic for everyone as we think about going into the next year and how we can reduce our exposures to toxins and really focusing on that toxin removal and what we need to do in our everyday lives. And we're so excited to have Baris Burgoyne with us again. And Baris, as you've come to hear her expertise in herbals as a whole, has had so much experience, and having been one of Carrie's first students, really had that opportunity to learn. And I know, Baris, as you're working with your patients, you're thinking about toxins and toxin removal when you're having those discussions with them. So are you ready to dive in? And maybe we can talk a little bit about how often somebody should focus on metabolic detox, and what does that look like in your practice?
Thank you very much. Yeah, look, I think it's really important that we do focus on this in our clinics. And I recommend that people do a detox probably twice a year, maybe once a year. It really depends on their lifestyle, their diet, and their toxin exposure, as I can assess it. But I will often, if people are exposed to toxins on a more regular basis, you know, a significant amount of toxins, either through their work or through drugs that they may be taking or alcohol use, then I will have them on herbs that support liver detox the whole time. And we might do a more concentrated detoxification program once or twice a year where they eliminate a whole range of different foods that really are a little bit heavy on the liver as well.
So can you give me a little bit more information? What does it really mean to do a metabolic detox? Like, what is that process in the body going through?
Okay, well, our bodies are quite amazing, actually. And our body has a tremendous ability to protect itself from toxins and eliminate them from the body. And it can only do so much of this, though. And we're often overloaded beyond what the body can deal with. And that's why we have to do a detoxification program. And there's a number of organs involved in the detoxification in our bodies, the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, the gut, the skin, etc. But it's the liver that's a major organ of detoxification. And it actually has the capacity to process the toxins so that they can be eliminated either through the bladder or the bowel. So when we're using herbs that support liver detoxification, or when we've got people on a detoxification program, there's two parts to that. One is that, as I said, we would eliminate things like alcohol, caffeine, high fats in the diet, particularly high saturated fats, etc. The things that really put a big load on the liver. And we would then give them a range of nutritional and herbal supplements to support their liver and really build up their liver health. The detoxification programs that I use are primarily focused on the liver, but not only the liver, also the gut. When I do a detoxification program with my patients, I will often include the gut flora balance protocol as well with that. And or sometimes one will follow the other, but often I will combine them. And that works extremely well. So you're covering the liver and the gut as well, because a lot of the toxins that are produced by the liver so that they, or processed by the liver so that they can be eliminated, they're eliminated in the bile. So that happens through the bowel, of course. So we really need to make sure that the bowel is very healthy.
If we think about, you know, this overall exposure, and then you talked about ramping it up, how are we getting exposed? How do we eliminate those exposures? What is the best method to do that?
Well, look, we're exposed to hundreds of chemicals every day in our daily lives. And, you know, there's sorts of toxins that we're exposed to. There's two key groups. One group is the endogenous toxins, and these are toxins that are produced in the body just from normal metabolic processes. The body is very capable of dealing with those, as long as the body's not overloaded with the exogenous toxins, and these are the toxins that come from outside of our body. So they can come from, you know, a whole range, from the environment. They can come from our diet, they can come from within our homes and from within our workplaces. And for many people, this is something that people often don't think about. Even when they're thinking, oh, maybe I need to do a liver detox, they might think, well, I'll stop having alcohol and caffeine. But they don't realize that there's many aspects of the diet that can deliver toxins, particularly if we've got a diet that's very high in processed foods, because it's going to be low in nutrients to start with. But it's also going to be loaded with a whole range of man-made chemicals. And these might be acting as antioxidants, preservatives, colouring agents, etc. But apart from that, we also are exposed to agricultural chemicals that are used in the growing of our foods very often. And it doesn't actually stop there, because once our foods are harvested, they're often treated with other chemicals in that post-harvest time to delay ripening, to extend shelf life, etc. So it's very hard to avoid toxins in our daily lives. So what's happening is that if we don't have a good, clean, green diet, or at least as much as we possibly can, we're increasing the toxic load with our diets, but at the same time, we're reducing the body's natural ability to carry out efficient detoxification because of nutrient depletion, because of our processed diets. And another thing to think of with diet is that processed diets are very low in fiber. And we know that fiber is the number one dietary component for a healthy gut microbiome. So if you have gut dysbiosis, that will absolutely impact adversely on detoxification pathways. So, you know, this is quite a long answer to this question, but I think it's important. Now, I mentioned we can be subjected to toxins in our workplace, but also where we live. There's a lot of research done on this, and they found that people living near waste dumps, for example, are subject to a much, much higher toxic load than the general population. So sometimes heavy metals, dioxins, etc. So, and people can't always change where they live. But what might surprise a lot of people is that we can be exposed to a significant number of toxins just within our homes. Now, most practitioners, and I certainly do, I routinely advise my patients about reducing chemical use around the house, in the garden, and you're watching what sort of personal care products they use. Avoid the use of plastic for water and food storage, never heat food in plastic, etc. We do all that sort of thing. But there's a lot of other sources of chemical exposure and toxin exposure in the home, and many of these are called endocrine disruptors. And one of the key groups of these, which are really difficult to avoid in our daily lives, are the flame retardants. And these are a significant problem because they're actually found in so many things in the home. They're found in upholstery, drapery, bed linen and mattresses. So where we're sleeping, and you can imagine how much of these flame retardants we might be breathing in during the night. They're in clothing, electronics, household appliances, and a whole range of building materials, including insulation. And they can sort of come off the fabrics or appliances that they're on. And we often find them in high quantities in house dust. And they find them in high quantities in the lint of clothes dryers as well. So make sure you dust your house and clean out the filter in your clothes dryer, because it will contain a lot of these flame retardants. But we also find them in automobiles and a whole range of public transport like planes, trains, buses, etc. And when you think about, if you have, you're sitting in your car, you're usually going to have all the windows up with the air conditioning or the heating on. And it's going to be a particular problem if it's a new car. And all of this with the flame retardants is much more significant with new products because there's so much there to be coming off into the environment. So if you can imagine you're seeing a patient who has just moved into a brand new home and they've got all new furnishings and soft furnishings, and they might have brought a new car as well. So they're going to be subjected to huge quantities of these flame retardants. Now, they can't really avoid them. They can air the house. They can try and drive with the windows open in the car sometimes, but they're not going to be able to totally avoid them. So what we need to do is explain all of this to them and explain the necessity of improving the detoxification pathways and reducing the oxidative stress, the free radicals that are produced because of all of this, to keep them healthy and help the body cope with all of these things. Because these are things that the body's not actually designed to cope with in the quantities that we're subjected to. So we could talk all day about how we're actually exposed to toxins. And there's hundreds and thousands of toxins in the environment that we're subjected to every day. And we can try and eat organic food as much as possible and try and live chemical free as much as possible. But we don't always have a lot of control over what's in the air we're breathing and to some extent the water that we're drinking.
It's interesting. I had read a study, I think it was done in 2019 or 18, looking at cord blood. And in that study showed the amount of chemicals, and I think it was close to 100 plus, in cord blood of an infant, right?
Oh, yes. It's just, and the amount of chemicals in breast milk, for example, in the placenta, it's just scary. Absolutely scary.
And even like, you know, we often think of somebody maybe who works in, you know, a chemical factory or somewhere would have those kind of exposures. But you see people who work in an office who, you know, in general have less exposures. But there's exposures on the paper and, as we said, you know, the foods and on and on. I mean, I thought one point that you had about the foods that we eat and the standard American diet, that SAD diet, really does contribute significantly to both nutrient depletion, which we need to fire our mechanisms of detox, and then adding things like other chemicals that would be in those canned foods and so on. You spent some time briefly talking about the liver. Can you dive a little bit deeper in how the liver really supports our toxin removal?
Okay. Look, there's basically three phases of detoxification in the liver. Some people say two, but we'll break it down into three, and I'll explain what each of those are. The first phase is called the bioactivation phase, and this involves the cytochrome P450 enzymes, and these cause a number of different chemical reactions. And so what they do is they change a chemical in a food or a drug or whatever, or a herb, to maybe a different substance. And this then goes on to phase two. Now, this is a very important step because for some drugs, it'll activate them so that they actually work. It does make substances more toxic very often. And a really good example of this is acetaminophen. And it definitely depends on phase one to convert it to a more active compound. But the new compound is much more toxic, particularly to the liver, than acetaminophen itself. So we're really reliant then on the phase two liver detoxification to come in, and this is what we call the conjugation phase. So what it does is it converts these toxic compounds to water-soluble molecules. So now they can be easily eliminated. And this can happen via the urine. And in many cases, it will happen, as I said before, through the bile and then through the bowel. So that the phase two, I think, phase two and three are in many ways the most important phases, because they get rid of these toxic compounds that are produced by phase one. Phase three simply involves the removal of the toxic compounds that phase two has conjugated. So when people talk about phase one and phase two liver detoxification, they're lumping the conjugation and the removal all into phase two, which is absolutely fine, but I thought I'd just break them up for this interview. So when I've seen patients in my clinic over the years, and you know, they do a liver function test, not just the liver function tests that are done with blood, they show up very little. When they've done a liver detoxification test to see which how each pathway is working, and they actually often do that with a caffeine loading or sometimes a acetaminophen. And what I've seen in by far, probably 99% of cases, is that it's phase two pathway that is deficient. Phase one is working fine, but often it's phase two that's not working well. And that's a dangerous situation because, you know, with if phase one's working well and it's dealing with compounds that we're taking in, some which may be already toxic when we take them in, and making them more so, then we absolutely have to have phase two and phase three working well. And of course, phase three can't do its job if phase two isn't doing it. So, you know, I think it's really important to try and explain this to our patient in simple terms. And I sometimes just have simple little flow charts that I do for patients and give them so that they can understand all of this and absolutely understand the importance of it. And if they can understand it, they're usually really keen then and really dedicated to looking at how they can reduce the toxic load in their bodies and support their liver.
When we think about all those opportunities to upregulate phase one, but, you know, which, as you said, isn't the most important, but phase two and elimination are really key to making sure it doesn't come back, right? That we yes. haven't released these toxins and now they're floating back in the system. So what are some herbs that can help first upregulate phase one, but then also improve conjugation at phase and then also think about elimination?
Okay, look, I think without doubt, my favorite herb for the liver is milk thistle, Salebum marianum. And the reason I say that is that it has a whole range of actions in the liver. It's hepatoprotective, so it protects the liver from damage, whatever is causing the damage. It's hepatotrophorestorative, which means it helps to restore liver tissue that hasn't been too badly damaged. And that is a profound action for a herb to have, particularly when we're talking about the liver. It doesn't have a significant influence on detoxification pathways directly, but because it helps to improve overall liver health and function, then it's actually helping to improve every function that the liver has. And there's, I think the last time I read something, it was something like over 500 functions that the liver performs. It's just such an amazing organ, and it's really beaten up so badly in our modern lives. So that milk thistle, I think whatever you're doing for the liver, if you need to do something, milk thistle has to be a part of it. There's two other herbs that I really commonly combine with milk thistle to actually improve liver detoxification, and that's rosemary and schisandra. And they help all phases, but they are particularly good at supporting phase two. And that, as I said, is the one that I often see is deficient in my patients. But I also like to use herbs that support the NRF2 pathway. And this is a pathway that exists in every cell in the body, and it helps support healthy detoxification. It reduces oxidative stress. And it has a cytoprotective function, so it helps to protect the cells from damage. If we have an increased toxic load, we're going to have increased numbers of free radicals. We're going to have increased inflammation, increased oxidative stress. So NRF2 doesn't just detoxify, it takes care of that oxidative stress somewhat as well. So the herbs that I use there are herbs like the Japanese knotweed because of the resveratrol content. Ginkgo and grapeseed also support NRF2 very well. And then there's another group of herbs that are NRF2 supporting that we can think of not only as herbal medicines, but also as food. So green tea, turmeric, garlic, cruciferous vegetables, because they contain the sulforaphane. We can add rosemary to this list because it supports NRF2. It also supports liver detoxification pathways directly. And of course, it's a food. So I'll often use these herbs as herbal supplements, but I will also encourage people to add them to their diet. So they're supporting NRF2, they're supporting liver detoxification pathways and helping to keep their body healthy in a whole range of different ways, I think many of which we really don't fully understand yet. Anything that supports NRF2, I think is really important. And if we can do it with our diets, then that's just absolutely great.
You know, I find, you know, the whole idea of supporting NRF2 is such an important aspect. And I know Carrie and I've had many discussions about this, and like even things like turmeric, which we may not always think as a detox, product, has that support, which I think is really, you know, fascinating. And of course, we love our cruciferous vegetables, right? As a whole, and eating them or taking them in supplement form too, right?
Absolutely. We've known for probably 5 decades or more that people who ate high levels of cruciferous vegetables in their diet were much less likely to get cancer. And I think understanding that they improve NRF2 tells us probably why they help prevent people to get cancer and a whole range of other chronic diseases as a result.
Mm-hmm. We had a great discussion about where the toxins are, maybe some ways to remove them, and what metabolic detox is in its 3 phases. You know, what would be those kind of last things that you would like to leave our audience with when they're thinking about herbs to help with metabolic detox? And, you know, what really is that opportunity that you see that they can improve upon their overall health through detoxification?
I think a really important point I'd like to make is that all of our patients will have exposure to toxins. And the degree to which this occurs will depend on a whole range of factors, some of which, you know, I've already discussed, and many of which you can't change. So if we can take a really good case history and ask the right questions and really listen to what our patients are telling us, then we're able to make a really accurate assessment as to what level of herbal support each individual patient might need, and also what dietary and lifestyle changes we might need to recommend to them. And all of that will really help to reduce their toxic load and improve detoxification pathways. And just one final point I'd like to make is that I always combine the herbal supplements I've spoken about with appropriate nutritional support. And I think that if you can combine the herbs that I've talked about today with a nutritional purification program once or twice a year, that's going to be very, very beneficial for the majority of your patients, even those that are seemingly not exposed to a high toxic load because of their lifestyle. They will be exposed to a whole range of toxins in the environment.
Yeah, I think you have it spot on, right? That there is this overall exposure and you need to have enough nutrients to support it. And the herbs help amp that up so that you really have that opportunity once or twice a year to really make a difference and remove that. So it really becomes part of your full clinical practice and important part of wellness for those patients.
It's absolutely right. And I think another thing to remember is the number of chemicals we're being exposed to in our environments are probably not going to decrease. The numbers are probably going to increase. Because right. There's this whole idea that you don't stop using a chemical unless you can absolutely prove that it's harmful. And that's very, very difficult to do. Mm-hmm. I think a much better way of doing it would be not to use them until you can prove they're absolutely safe.
But of right.
course, that's not the way that it actually happens.
Right. Yes. As we've seen some delisting of some herbicides and pesticides over the years, right? It would have been better the other way around for sure.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yeah.
We'll all try to reduce our exposure where possible, maybe have a nice organic salad and with a lot of cruciferous vegetables in it, right?
Absolutely.
and take some Silymarin to help, you know, the milk thistle to help protect our livers in the process. Thank you so much again for always providing us, you know, great insight into your clinical practice and your knowledge of herbs and how we can really, you know, help patients figure out those next steps and help practitioners improve their practice. So with that, I want to thank you and have a great day.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Holistic Matters podcast. For more resources on detoxification, including articles, videos, and more, go to holisticmatters.com. That's holistic with a W.